You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, we're just going to roll because that's how we roll when we roll. And so thanks for tuning in to the Best Practices Show podcast. I got a little frog in my throat. I don't know what the deal is, but I'm going to let John do most of the talking today. But I'm so excited you guys are here. Now, I'm going to just call you guys out because actually I'm not calling you out because I don't even know how it works. We've been doing all these videos and you guys don't even watch the videos, but you listen to the audios and all I can say is thank you. And I'm just absolutely loving this. Now, if you've been with us at any portion, any point, anywhere, anytime, you've seen this guy. And I like to tell the story, a little bit of the story. And today we're going to be talking about one of the things that we want you to do or consider is the importance of goals and what a BHAG is. And, you know, I've shared some BHAGs with John and John Cranham, who's become a dear friend of mine and a dear mentor of mine. We're going to talk about that because if anything, I think both of us want the same thing for you, which is a great 2022, and it's better than what 2021 was. Now, let's go right into it. But John, I want people to know who the heck you are because I got a lot of dental students now listening. Who the heck is John Cranham? Like, who are you? Where do you practice? What do you do first?
Yeah, so I'm a 60-year-old dude now, which is kind of crazy. Definitely midway through the back nine of life, as you say, but been a dentist a long time. But I'm a husband and father first. I got three great kids. One is also a young dentist who's just started practicing a little over a year ago. Been involved in CE for about 25 years. I think I've done about 1600 days of CE I've taught during that time. I was the clinical director of the Dawson Academy from 2007 until 2020, and was honored by the Clinical Director Emeritus Award they gave me this year. And so still a lot of love in my heart for that organization, but with my daughter coming into practice with me, I needed to get off the road and spend a little more time in my office and with my most important student. And the other thing I've really gotten into, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but just completely transformed my practice in the last 3 years into 100% digital workflows. And, you know, I was a stone and articulator guy my whole career. And so, you know, been mired in virtual articulation and digital wax ups. And what's really been fun for me this last year was I created a group called Cranham Clinical Coaching. And I've been coaching 35 doctors into this transition of bringing virtual articulation into the office. And so that was so fun. I'm partnering up with Lee Culp this year and we're starting another entity and kind of taking it up a notch. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, so a daddy, a dentist, an educator, an author, a lot of things.
Yeah. And at some point we're going to talk about the Cornell effect with your amazing son. And I want to incorporate all that. And I think it's really important to talk about the why. You know, John, you're an important, still are, and still always have been an important mentor of mine. So I'm just telling you guys, you got to see this guy speak. You always help me understand like the mind, the heart, the hands of a dentist and what's really going on inside your mind when you're looking at some of these things. And you also dispel a lot of the rumors. You're like, anybody that tells you they're working on full mouth cases all the time. Oh, come on. Like you can only manage like 8 really important things at one time. And you don't really want, so you've really created a reality for me, you know? And I mean, there's so many cranisms that I use, like aerobic, anaerobic. And like, we actually have to do an episode on cranisms.
I didn't even know that's a thing. That's
hey, like I like making stuff up on the fly here, but, and then the first time I met you, Traverse City, Michigan, which some of you guys heard that story, I just stalked him. And the important thing, I think the one lesson here is that I would just throw in the room right away is mentors don't find you. You find them. I stalked the crap out of you and probably scared you a little bit and told you that we were going to be friends. And you were like, I'll be the judge of that. And we had similar stories and similar paths. And one of them was the Iron Man, but that's not really, we're not talking about the Iron Man. We're talking about big goals. So what would you say about this topic, BHAGs, before we get into the details? What's important about setting goals?
Well, to me, you know, the BHAG, for those that you don't know, big, hairy, audacious goals. For my whole life, you know, whether it was the Iron Man or whether it was, you know, getting a chance to teach with Pete Dawson or finish my book or, you know, the biggest things in my life that were important to me from a professional standpoint started with a idea that got me excited, that seemed impossible. Almost seemed like I couldn't do it. And I think that's one of the things is that if you can think of something that really excites you and it seems impossible, but there's a sliver of chance that you might be able to do it, there's something about that that sort of ejects you out of bed in the morning. And so for me, and everybody's wired a little bit different, but I do think extremely successful people that I admired, you know, Pete Dawson, for instance, you know, he died 2 years ago. And, you know, I remember being with him at my lake house 2 weeks before he passed away. And he was talking about things that, I mean, he never didn't have something that he was a BHAG that he was working on. And he was showing me, you know, it was this book layout that he was working on. And so I think that if you don't have that, if you don't have that goal, that thing that's exciting you, then it's really easy to just start to get caught into the day-to-day routine. And I can think about times in my life when dentistry became mundane or my life started to become a little not boring, but less fulfilling. I'll tell you, one of the most amazing times was right after I got asked to teach with Dr. Dawson, and I was on the the faculty before I was clinical director, but I was all of a sudden teaching there. And I went through this like 6-month period of time and I didn't really understand what was going on, but I was a little bit depressed and was kind of going through the motions and didn't really know what was going on. So one night at dinner, I talked to Pete about it. I said, I'm struggling a little bit. And he goes, so we talked about it for about 5 minutes and he goes, well, sounds like you need another goal. And I said, it just hit me in a ton of bricks as I had this BHAG of becoming an educator and maybe someday getting a chance to teach with Pete Dawson. And then it happened. And, you know, what really struck me is it's not as much about attaining the goal as it is chasing it and using it for inspiration. And I think that's really important because even if you don't quite complete everything that you might have visualized in that BHAG, you still end up in a completely different place that's going to be better. Yeah. And so I think it's really important. I do it every year and I kind of think about 1, 5, and 10 year goals. And to have something that I'm excited about. And I just know like right now with what I'm doing with Lee, I'm having a hard time sleeping at night. It's so exciting about what we're doing now. So it's just really cool.
I love it. And you know, a lot of people call it different things. I've heard it called a future pole, like something to look forward to. And then you got embraced into, or you embraced the whole Iron Man you know, marathon journey. If you ever done that, I'm terrible at all three disciplines, but I remember my coach saying, no, the reward is the race. You know, the benefit is, you know, the training is what you got to embrace, because the race, when you do it, that's the fun part, you know? And I think what you're saying is exactly true. You got to convince yourself to get out of bed. And some of you that are listening, you're in dental school right now, and you know, I just got to get through this. I got to somehow get through this. And you know, there's rewards once you get through and can prove to yourself you can get through this obstacle, right? And I think it just layers a little bit of confidence. Is that how your goals got bigger? Is like, you're like, okay, I did this one.
The thing that I struggled with, Kirk, was, you know, I was pretty good at the BHAG, but you know, one of the second thing kind of below the BHAG is those like attainable stepping stones. Sometimes you can see crystal clear where you want to go. Like I can vividly remember hearing Pete Dawson for the first time in 1989. I drove my little car down to St. Pete and heard him, and I was so excited when I finished the class on noon on Saturday. I drove all the way back to Portsmouth, Virginia. I got home like 4 a.m. and I drove to my office to start working on stuff. This little crummy 800 square foot office that I just bought, that, you know, I think the doctor had done like 4 crowns the entire year. It was just a big filling, silver filling practice. But there was a lot of opportunity there. And then I can remember just being like depressed, because I could see where I wanted to go. Like I knew the kind of practice I wanted to have, but I had no idea what to work on Tuesday or Monday to start the process. And so I do think having, like you say, those little attainable stepping stones that are working in the direction of where you want to go. And that's where, like in dentistry, you know, finding a mentor, finding people that are getting similar results in your community or even outside your community. And that's where today, I think with social media, it's easier. Back then, there wasn't even the internet yet. I know it's hard to believe, but I mean, dentistry, I always used to say the loneliest place in the world was a dental office after a Pete Dawson class. I just felt completely by myself. And I do think now there's lots of ways to connect with people that can sometimes give you those little steps. And so the Ironman was a great example, because I had done a lot of triathlons as, you know, a teenager and in dental school. And then I got this idea at 39 to do it. And I went to a store called Final Kick in Virginia Beach and met a guy named Jerry Frostick. They own J&A Racing in Virginia Beach now and run a lot and run a lot of the races here. But he had coached like 160 people to successfully complete the Ironman. And you know, I knew within like 2 minutes of talking to this dude that this was going to be a friend of mine, that I was going to. So I started, you know, with little runs on Saturday, and then the runs got longer. And then he just sat down and wrote this plan for me and just laid it out, just say. But then to your point, the work then really begins, because you don't wake up one morning and swim 2.4 miles, ride 112 miles and run a marathon. I just think that there's always going to be somebody there. I mean, I'm sure, you know, brilliant people will find their own path.
Yeah.
But again, if you can find a coach that can give you a path, but then it's ultimately up to you to get up every day and to follow that path and learn from it and tweak it along the way.
Now take us into this though. You're 60, it's December in 2021. Like, give me an idea of what you're doing right now. You sent me a text this morning. You're like, okay, the yearly review and then stepping, you know, set attainable. What are you doing right now? Like, tell me, I mean, you don't have to share all the details, but give us an idea of what's inside your
mind. I start kind of like mid-November.
Okay.
I start kind of thinking about what's happened, and I might have the big picture of things that I see out there that's kind of beyond this year. But a lot of times, most of my BHAGs are attached to what I want to accomplish this year, and so I start just sort of thinking about it, and then I always block the first Monday after Christmas, where I sit down with a big pad of paper, and that's where I've kind of thought about it, chewed about it, and that's where it all comes down. And And I sort of break it out into some physical goals, things that I want to do. You know, it used to be a little more inspiring when I was younger, but now there's kind of a weight that I want to hit. There might be a couple of activities that I want to be able to do. Might be a golf score, but there's some of that. Certainly some financial goals. I think a lot about that. And now, believe it or not, a lot of my goal setting has to do with more time off. I'm at that point where blocking more what Pete called blue time, you know, more time at the lake. I probably, one of my goals this year is by June, I want to go to 3 days a week and just work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we're going to bring in another doctor, one of Caitlin's friends, to be with her. We're building a new office right now, so that's really exciting. But I do think that sometimes I don't think people spend enough time thinking about it. Like they just take themselves to lunch one day and then just write some things down. I'm taking a good month just kind of when I'm driving, anytime I got a minute, I'm exercising, I'm sort of thinking about what I want to do. And then I pay attention to what makes me feel excited, you know? And again, I think that's one of the real keys about BHAGs. And for me, the best ones are usually going to be things that make me feel like I'm making a difference, like that's going to be benefiting the people and other people on the planet. And if there's some financial reward as well doing that, that's good too, because they kind of got to fuel both of those things if it's going to be a business thing. Now, if it's a BHAG that's completely related to giving back, that's something else altogether. And I usually have a little bit of that in there too, about things that Kim and I may want to do together that is just, you know, charity or something along those lines too. Yeah. But I do think it's really a fun way to finish the year, celebrate a little bit about what you've done, and, you know, maybe examine a couple things that fell short and learn from that. We don't always attain all our goals. That's okay. Mm-hmm. And move forward. I do want to say that I think one of the really critical things about this, and you may comment on this too, but really successful people, they have the ability to create daily behaviors that direct themselves towards these goals, these stepping stones. And I remember that, you know, one of the absolute simplest, most thing that I ever saw in Pete Dawson every day got up. And he would go to his desk and he would get a 3x5 card. Do you know this? Did you ever know this?
Oh, yeah.
He'd get a 3x5 card and he'd sit there for about 15 or 20 minutes and he would write six things and it wasn't a to-do list. It wasn't like pick up the laundry. It was six things that would direct him towards these long-term BHAGs that he had. And, you know, I can tell you, I mean, here he was, you know, on oxygen at the end of his life, showing up with our lake house, and I'll just never forget it, because I look in his, you know, he's showing up and he's having to help him out, and he's, you know, walker and the whole thing, and I look in his top little pocket there, you can, this little 3x5 card is sticking out of his dang pocket, and
that's,
he did
so
it his
awesome.
Whole life.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't need any 3x5 cards, but we've got phones, we've got all these different ways, but the point is, having a system in place where you're thinking about it every day, because especially in dentistry, there's just so much coming at us all the time that unless we carve the time to work towards some of these things, all we hear is the noise.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, you brought up a couple things. Is number one, breaking up into sustainable small stepping stones. We do this. I've heard this so many times. People often plan their vacations more than they plan their own lives and their businesses. And I think that's absolutely true. And so we always sit down as a company, do a strategic, but we have a 3-year plan and a 1-year plan. And I think the important one for us is the 90-day plan. So we can get our brains around 13 weeks of discipline. So we just take all these things and we focus on 3 to 5 priorities and 3 to 5 KPIs. And you know how this works. You make them a little bit better. Every human being can get around 13 weeks. You get into 5 months, that's a long time. But 3 months, I can stay focused on one thing that might help us automatically. That's a system. The other thing is just time allocation. One of my coaches on Tuesday, she does this with her team, and I love it. They set goals, and then she says, show me where it's scheduled. And I'm like, what? She's like, I want to see this goal and how it relates to your time, which is the same thing that your coach did with you. It's like, you're going to do your long runs on Saturdays or Sundays. And you put them in. I think that's the important piece, because there are going to be goals that you don't make, John. And you learn from them and you go, okay, I realize, not to let them deflate you. But I think a lot of times dentists just get into this busy thing. And then they do set reasonable goals. And then one more thing, I don't even know if there's a question in here. I like the idea of creating a goal that matters. Like, if I do this, what's its impact on others, the rest of the people around me? So those are considerations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do think that if it's, you know, I mean, we all have, this is really aimed at some of the dental students, but, you know, when you're at that point in life, all you maybe are thinking about with your goals is just having an income. Right. I mean, right. And start working on your debt. And, you know, it'd be nice to be able to not stress if you go to dinner or something like that. I mean, you want some kind of basic things. You're looking forward to the rewards of being a dentist. But it's really important to remember is that that's going to happen. I mean, right. You work a little bit. Even average dentists have pretty good lives. But to be really joyous in life, and this is something that is one of the themes in the book that I wrote about my son that I learned from him, was that, you know, he had all these physical things going on and he was going through them as a really young little boy. And it occurred to me when he was about 2 or 3 years and we almost lost him and he fought so hard to stay alive that even through all that, he was so freaking happy. And I started to realize that he was so happy because he was just giving 100%. And when things were bad around him, like when he was through some of the bad stuff and he had a moment to feel somewhat normal, he was just so joyous because the contrast between what he was feeling and how he was like now is just better.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things to really remember as a dentist, and it's that old book, you know, good can become the enemy of great. You can be doing good enough that you are kind of like an 80, 75, 85%er, and you're taking reasonable care of your patients and you're making reasonable crowns and you're, you know, usual and customary and all that stuff. But I think the joy in any of us is when we're given our best. And as part of that best, we have the feeling that we're helping other people and making the world a little bit better. And that's just been my thing. And if I am ever in a position where I'm not having that anymore, then we're going to create another BHAG to get my finger back into that pot. Yeah. That's me. So again, for the young dentist out there listening, just remember the success will come, but keep striving to do better.
Yeah, I think you dropped a very important note, and you can't just give, you know, you gave us a little smidgen, but go back to that when you say good can become the enemy of great. Like let's say I'm a 34-year-old dentist, listen to this. What does that mean to me, John? Like, go a little bit deeper, because that's really important what you just said.
Well, you know, what I mean by that is that it's very easy for a dentist to start practicing dentistry. And as your speed comes up, you're going to be able to do enough dentistry to make a pretty darn good living, way above the average. And what I'm just saying is, if that's good, if that's a good dentist, and all you want out of the profession is to take care financially of your patients, by the time you're 45 or maybe 55, the culture of that may not be enough. I find that the culture of what I've been able to do in dentistry is constantly reinvent myself to make me feel like I'm getting better. People, I say, dude, you're 60. Why? You've been using articulators your whole life. Why are you reinventing your whole practice to be digital? And I say, you know why? Because it's awesome. That's why. Awesome. It's freaking awesome. It's fun. And my staff knows that if I get something working pretty darn well, I'm going to find a way to make it even better tomorrow. Yeah. And so I know that sounds kind of cliche or whatever, but one of the greatest things about this profession is to always strive to be great. I don't think I'm there yet. I don't think I'm great. I don't think I'm there yet, but it's the striving part and the working at it and seeing things improve that makes it so fun and rewarding.
I love it.
Yeah, I remember having at our 25th. I probably shouldn't tell the story, but what the hell, I'm 60.
Go for it.
But I was at my 25th dental school reunion, and we were all around the table with all my buddies, and there was this one guy over there that was sitting, and he was talking about how he thought we had such a great education at Virginia Commonwealth University, which we did back in the 80s. And I was sitting there thinking about it, that I remember I really hadn't seen him anywhere. Like, I hadn't seen him in any meetings or anything. And he goes on, he goes, you know, and I was thinking about it, I really don't do anything different than what they taught me at VCU in 1988. And I'm sitting there thinking, I can't think of anything that I do the same. Like, I can't even think of anything that I do the same. Even taking out teeth is different because I use a laser to cut the PDLs and stuff. So it's, you know, I'm sure he's happy and, you know, whatever, but I just think the people in this profession that I admire and I think are getting the most joy out of it are the ones that continues to strive to be better.
Yeah, and that's one thing that Pete said to me at the age of 24. I said, Dr. Dawson, is there one thing you could tell me about this great profession? He goes, never tell yourself you have it all figured out. I mean, even at my age. Now, he was exactly, so I was 24, he was 64. And so he was like, you know, you're going to find, Kirk, the people that have it all figured out, they're not that much fun. And I'm always learning from younger dentists. And that's the mold you're cut from and all that. Now, some of the things that you mentioned, and you've said this, like the external pressures to goals. You said, don't let the cultural timelines pressure you. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, it's the old adage that comparison is the enemy of contentment.
Right.
You know, and it, as you... But I'll, again, aim maybe at the younger dentists. You're going to go through this, and you have to remember that everybody's in different, so, you know, all your buddies are going to be in different cities, different socioeconomic areas, different practices, different opportunities. You all may have, you may go into this with similar goals, but there's going to be certain people that develop faster or have a different opportunity. You know, I can remember being very frustrated the first year or two in my little town of Portsmouth because there were people that were going through the classes, maybe a little bit older than me, that were just seemingly doing the kind of cases that I wanted to be doing, and it wasn't happening yet. But what happened was when I finally, I don't know what clicked, whether it was my communication, but I kept at it, kept at it, kept at it. When the floodgates finally opened, there was so much opportunity in my own practice that it sort of took care of itself. But I can remember being very close in that first, you know, 18 months to 2 years to quitting, to not dentistry, but quitting trying to do that kind of dentistry. I just kind of thought that I was going to, that the whole drill, fill and bill, and just focus on insurance and not optimum care. I came very close to just thinking that it wasn't going to happen where I was at because it wasn't happening at the speed that I thought it should. And so I think that's a very important part is, and again, I, in the book about my son, that's one of my most, I marvel at him, with some of his learning disabilities. I mean, even still, I mean, he's in my practice and does a lot of my digital design work for me. And it's funny because sometimes I'll be wanting him to learn something faster than he's capable of learning it. And he knows that, but he never gets too upset. He just kind of says, Dad, I will get it. I'm on Cornell time right now.
That's awesome.
And so he's just kind of letting me know that it's going to take him a little longer, but he'll get there. And so I just think that when you set a BHAG, I think it's important to set a goal, like you want to have a timeline, but if you get to the end of the year and you haven't attained it, then your next BHAG is simply going to be what you haven't accomplished yet is just going to be added on. It just extends into it. And probably the BHAG will even change a little bit. You know, you might add to it or alter it slightly, but you're going to be in a different place regardless. And that's what I think is so important is regardless of how long it takes, if you're working towards it, you're growing. And if you're growing, I think you're happy. You know, I think we're happy. your inside if you're focusing on the growth.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I often refer to this whole thing in life as a mountain without a top. We're climbing and I've got a goal. We might fall short of how far I want to go, but once you get to the clearing with your team and you look back, you're going to go, wow, look how small our car is. Like, we've come a long way. Let's enjoy this. And what have we learned by getting this far? And, you know, it's okay. I like the idea of just, I want to hit the goal, don't get me wrong, but progress is really important to our well-being. I think God designed us that we have to have progress. So when you look at this year, I think also too, John, can you speak to this? Like, you were important to me because you can't figure this stuff on your own. Like, you got to be vulnerable with people that you trust and go, and there are so many times you go, come here, you don't know what's going on here. But you, like, one of these things, I'll share this story. You said to me, speaking doesn't go like this. Speaking goes like this. And you need to block off your summers. You know, you were kind of like, come here, little hot shot. You think you're all that cool. Block off. I'm like, well, what do I say? Well, and they say, can you do a Saturday? You say, I can't. And they'll call you back on a Thursday. Well, sure enough.
They just say you're booked. They don't have to know that you're with your kids. You're just booked.
I'm such an idiot that I would have never. Now, if you wouldn't have told me that, I would have screwed up so many Saturdays. And what was so cool was what you said happened. And then there are other things that you've said to me that were just so important. I think the point is this: you got to find people that you can open up to, be vulnerable about what you're trying to do, and they go, "I've been where you're going. Beware, you know. Like, and here's a couple things to learn." And they'll also tell you the truth.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is, and you've always said this about me. I mean, I just have never let like what's happening in dentistry or life or people determine what I'm going to focus on. Right. Like, I spend a lot of time on what's going to be best for me and my family, and where I think I can make the biggest difference. And if that means that I'm going to talk about both occlusion and cosmetic dentistry at the same time in the 1990s, you know, which was so funny, but that was kind of crazy back then, but it just made sense. And, you know, bringing my practice and merging it with Heartland 5 years ago, that was looked at as crazy. It's worked out for me. Stepping away from the Dawson Academy shocked a lot of people. But, you know, the thing of it is you got to keep evolving, and you have to understand that as you're going through this life, that where you think you're going to be at 45, 55, 65, whatever, doesn't necessarily, it's just going to be where you are. And that's why I think you always have to review, okay, where am I? And is what I'm doing now working for me? Right. You know, 2 years ago, when I was doing the same thing, I'm like, you know, in that year, I traveled to China twice, Japan twice, Taiwan. You know, I'd been all these international. When I would do that, I'd work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, get on a plane, fly, get there Friday night, lecture 2 10-hour days, fly back and go to work Tuesday. And so you're lecturing literally like eight at night till 5 or 6 in the morning, our time. And you get, so, you know, all of a sudden at 60, when COVID hit, I just gotten back from Poland and I like slept for 2 weeks. The first 2 weeks of COVID, I didn't realize how much kind of cortisol was going through my system. COVID weirdly may have saved my life because I was just burning hot. And then it was like, I also had my daughter coming out of dental school, and my vision was always, well, at 60, I'm going to stop dentistry and I'm just going to teach with the Dawson, because that's what Pete Dawson did.
Right.
But Pete Dawson also had it where all the classes were coming to St. Pete where he lived. He wasn't flying all over the world. So it was completely different circumstances. So it's so important, because while that was absolutely the hardest decision of my life, I'm having more fun right now than I've ever had. Practicing with my daughter and my son and, you know, doing this digital stuff and coaching people one-on-one, it's just freaking awesome. And so I think that's attached to, though, being really clear about what's going on inside of yourself and constantly reviewing that. Yeah. And as you're constantly reviewing that, then you can start directing your energies, because it's so easy to get on this treadmill and you just can't get off. And I was kind of there. I was kind of there. I was getting crispy.
Yeah. And so you always use crispy. And I think of you in May. You'd call me in May and go, are you crispy yet? And I'm like, what does that mean? Because I'm feeling, I got this deep subjective pain. I don't know what to call it. And crispy is a good word. I'd get to the airport and the person would go, where are you going? And I'd go, Vimager. And they go, where? Now, when I think of you and goals, like, I think it's important. Like, you've always been a little crazy. Like, and you, it's okay to be a little crazy. Like, cosmetic occlusal connection. I mean, you put yourself out there that you could have been crucified for that title alone. And that was a very controversial title in 2005.
It sounds crazy that it was, but
it sounds crazy. Right. You know, and then you're like, well, I'm going to be a pilot. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, I'm going to write a book. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, it's not important that you prove this to anybody else. It's the fact that you just, it's okay to set up crazy little goals that are just important to you. And when you get them done, it makes you feel like, hey, look, that was worthwhile.
And, you know, like the book thing, it was, you know, I told the story from the podium a bunch of times and I saw it resonating with people. And again, the book came out of two things. One, Pete Dawson sort of challenged me on it. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is, and when you start thinking about, you know, what could make a difference? I saw the difference that this, my boy made in our lives and the number of people that it had touched just hearing the story. And so, you know, that had been a BHAG for like 10 years and I just kept chipping away at it and pushing it off. COVID is when I finished it. And I think I told you it hit number 5 on the Amazon bestseller list in our category in November, which is amazing. But it is, I mean, I'm touching all these people that outside of dentistry, like getting these emails and things. And, you know, he got invited on to the Voice of the Hokies, read the book and invited him on his sideline. So he's on the sideline with all the Virginia Tech football players this fall. And it's, you know, they all read the book. It's just crazy how a little thing starts in your head and you start chipping away at it. And again, it was a 10-year process. That I was discouraged a lot of those years that I had written it down and I really didn't get much done on it other than just notes.
Yeah.
But now that in retrospect, what I realized was the book wasn't done yet. Like there was more to the story and I could tell that there was something that hadn't happened yet. And him reacquainting with his twin was kind of once that happened, I just had this feeling like, This is what I was waiting for. And
yeah. So I look at that as the first chapter. Like it's now I'm just going to say this because if you go back and watch previous episodes and we're going to do a follow up on this and I actually want to get Cornell on here. Yeah. If you haven't read it. So if you're listening on Spotify, just flip up to the notes. You're going to see a link. It's called The Cornell Effect. You can get it on Amazon. But John, just talk about the book. I'm just going to highly encourage you guys. If you guys haven't read it, it's a great gift. I gave it to my aunt. She doesn't know anything about dentistry. She loved it. So like, just read it. Tell us a little bit about the book and what we should expect.
So yeah, the story, it's our family story. We have a son who's adopted, who's 29, African-American. He was born 1 pound, 9 ounces, addicted to crack cocaine, was my wife's patient in the children's hospital. We were a young couple, couldn't get pregnant. And she sort of encouraged me to bring him home as a foster child. And you know, we were told he'd never walk or talk or do much of anything. And it's just this unbelievable, uplifting story of this kid with this insatiable appetite for life that had several near-death experiences who just has gone through this pretty tough existence with just this incredible smile on his face and very cognitively aware that he's on the other side of the bell curve, but just has accomplished all these things and, you know, drives and has a job and does a lot of the digital design stuff, worked in lab tech for 5 years. And so anyway, but it's, the story is really about the effect that he's had on us. And I can tell you for sure that the things we're talking about today, the BHAGs and that the energy of kind of going from an 85 percenter to a 95 percenter comes from this kid. He just kind of shamed me into it. And once I started to behave more like him, and people say, well, you taught him to be like that. No, we didn't. He taught us to be like that.
That's awesome.
Once I started to behave more like that, I started to understand that there was some metrics to this and some structure to this and the stuff we're talking about today. And it's just worked beautifully. But yeah, the Cornell Effect, it's a great read. And it's been a fun little journey doing all that.
Yeah, it's an extra special journey for a kid who didn't have much of a chance to survive and be on the sidelines with the Hokies talking to the coaching staff. And like, it's pretty amazing and a great example of a BHAG. And then, you know, any good thought, like I want to just kind of give people a couple last thoughts on goals as they look forward to this year and next year and the year after. John, help us see what a good process is, or wrap this up in a bow for us when we look forward.
Well, I think the biggest thing is go, as you think about your BHAGs, think about it beyond just financial, right? So if you're attaching a 10% or 8% or whatever your growth is going to be to your practice, what I want you to think about is, what are you going to do better that's going to earn that? Like, what are you going to be doing? Don't think about it in the context of just doing more of it or just working harder. Right. Probably will work a little bit harder, but how are you going to be different as a dentist next year? And again, big part of what I'm doing now is helping dentists learn how to plan, learn how to set back and make more complex treatment plans so that when they're sitting down to do dentistry, they're doing more, in the same amount of time, rather than just chasing single teeth all over the place. And so, I think that as a dentist, the more you can focus your time on becoming a great diagnostician, and then also looking to put workflows into your practice that will allow you to see the problems and see the solutions faster. That's what I'm helping dentists do now through visual workflows. But however you choose to do that. Right. Because again, wherever you are and however long you're practicing, when you're sitting down to do the clinical part of dentistry, there's a speed that we're all going to work. But if you can learn to plan that better, you're always going to end up doing more dentistry in the same amount of time. Yeah. I'd also say, review your hours. I've been a big fan of the straight six or the straight eight of how, I sort of work 7 to 2 without lunch. Think about that too. It's a great thing. If you've got a family, we get to choose our hours. I just think that, if you can give the gift to yourself, your family, and your team and their families, that you can do the same or more dentistry in a shorter work day. It's just 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the summers. Are you kidding me? I mean, you can go play 18 holes before dinner time. So, I just think that there's a lot of opportunity right now to sit back and look at this from a lot of different ways. But best way to think about this is to set some of those BHAGs, float them around your head. And if you start getting a little some butterflies in your stomach, that's probably a pretty good BHAG. If you're thinking about something that's just kind of dead, it's probably not a good one.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I love this. And I would also say, if you're a young dentist listening, listen, being a dentist is hard. Being an entrepreneur is hard. Yeah. Don't try to do this on your own. And, some of you might be thinking, well, Kirk, you had mentors. No, I went out and found them. And John,
you did.
I would just say, hey, listen, you guys can do the same thing. And John, you have an opportunity where people can get under your care. You can take a look at their stuff and give them feedback. It's a golden opportunity to get inside the mind of a master. So John, tell us a little bit about your study club. How does that work? What do you do?
Yeah, so the Cranham Clinical Coaching, I started with about 20 docs. It went to about 35 over the last year. And what we were basically doing is getting them on the 3Shape Lab software. And I created a online subscription-based one-year course where they learned the software, learned how to mount cases, learned how to equilibrate, plan aesthetic cases, do wax ups, or, working with laboratories to help them. And during that time, I'd been working with Lee Culp, who, and if those of you don't know, Lee is one of the best dental technicians on the planet and has a completely digital lab in Raleigh. And so this year we've created a new entity called Cranham Culp Digital Dental, which is going to have the same coaching opportunity, the same subscription base But we're going to have some digital immersion classes there that focus on aesthetics and wear and implants and all that as well. So what I would just say is I'm going to be coming back with Kirk on one of the Friday 90 minutes. Kirk or Lee and I are going to come on, and we'll probably sort of launch when it launches first of the year. So we'll jump on in early January or end of January or something like that, and do one of those spots if that's possible, and tell you more about it. But in the meantime, if you want to email me directly, it's just smiledoc without an E, S-M-I-L-D-O-C. And just do the AOL, smiledoc@AOL.com. It comes to me directly and no one sees it.
You know, I think you're the last person in all of dentistry that still has an AOL.
I've got four emails, but that's the one that dentists can get me at. And I just think it's kind of retro now. It's kind of cool. It's gotten cool again.
Now, I love you dearly, but does it say, you've got mail? I'll take it. I don't know.
I think that stopped.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I'm going to voluntold you that you got to come here to Milwaukee and show off this stuff. And, you know,
We may do a digital immersion thing.
Let's do it.
That'd be great.
That'd be awesome, man. So, buddy, thank you so much for jumping in. And I'm just going to tell you, you know, the importance of sitting down every single year, creating a BHAG. And I know John well enough that if you reach out to him, he's going to reach back and give you some great perspective. And I'm just going to say this. Even if he says one sentence or two sentences, it's worth gold and use it. So thank you, brother, for being a great friend, great mentor of mine. And make sure you check out the Cornell Effect. We're going to put links to all that stuff that he's mentioned in the show notes. So if you're driving, stop driving. Don't do this while you're driving. Flip up to the notes. You can click right on it. It'll take you right there. Keep sending us suggestions. You guys send a lot of great stuff about things that you want to see from either John or any other guest. We'll line them up for an amazing 2022. And most importantly, just tell yourself, tell your family, your team, hey, next year is going to be the best year of our lives. Here's why. And you'll see its impact on everybody else. So thank you guys for listening. So until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.